is an empty nothing burger. The text of the agreement that Scott Bessent, the Treasury Secretary, has now negotiated with the Ukrainians has no $390 billion payback, has no payback, no revenue item at all, no commitment to any identified minerals in the Ukraine, exclusion of all existing mineral deposits and working mines. I could go on and on. We don't have very much time, but the text of this first achievement with between President Trump and Ukraine and the rest of the world is a zero. And whether he understands that or not, it's perfectly clear now. What he also is unclear about, and what must be unclear about, is the opening that President Macron gave him on Monday, which Mr. Starmer, the Prime Minister of the UK, may repeat on Thursday at the White House, and on which the Russians, whom I quoted in that article you mentioned, have opened up. And that's whether it's possible for the United States to agree to the terms the Russian Foreign Ministry offered back in December 2021 without dismantling NATO. That essentially, put simply, would mean the withdrawal of U.S. troops from their principal bases outside the new NATO territories, particularly Romania and Poland, where the big tests, the biggest tests for whether Trump is empty, an empty vessel, the biggest test is De Veselu, the Aegis nuclear armed base in Romania, and Regicovo, the nuclear armed Aegis base in northern Poland. If Trump shutters those and withdraws from them, then we're cooking. Then we have a serious basis for a new security architecture in Europe following the Ukraine war. I don't believe that Trump understands these details. And in a minute, we can discuss why underneath Trump, there are level officials he's appointed who are still as committed to fighting race war against Russia as the Biden administration gang.
I saw some of that presser on Monday, and it was really giving me flashbacks to, if not Joe Biden's dementia, then maybe Ronald Reagan's earlier dementia, where he didn't seem quite right to me. I don't know. And then, of course, Macron, faux pas magnifique. He touched Trump and started to correct him, and I couldn't believe it, and neither could Trump by the looks of his face. But Putin has a brain, apparently, and if there's no minerals to be had really in this deal, and that everything is just smoke and dust, as you say, and there's reports that all of these rare earth metals purported by Trump and everybody else don't really exist in Ukraine in any kind of quantity to justify anything. But Putin says, we would be happy to work with any foreign partners, including those of American ones, whatever that means. But Putin is saying he's opening the doors to, as if this 3-year-long war hadn't even happened and it wasn't America that started it. And those however many thousands, tens of thousands of Russians have been killed by it, everything is forgotten, it seems to me anyway. Am I being too hard on Vladimir?
Not at all. I think you've accurately described half of the Putin policy at the moment. I need to correct my diagnosis of President Trump's brain. I said he can't read words. What he can do is count money. And what has happened, and what's very clear, is that President Putin is pitching money back at Trump as an inducement to settle the war. This has happened in several ways, and it's perfectly obvious. It was obvious in Trump's appointment of a real estate speculator lawyer named Stephen Witkoff to the original Riyadh meetings with Marco Rubio, the Secretary of State, and Waltz, the National Security Advisor, with Foreign Minister Lavrov back a week ago in Saudi Arabia. Putin has now promoted Kirill Dmitriev, the head of the Russian wealth fund, the Russian direct investment fund, as the money negotiator for Russia to match Vitkov. And the two of them have now been pitching oligarch, be nice to oligarch day proposals at each other. On the one hand, President Putin called in a reporter he usually uses to say things on Sunday evening to propose a big US investment in Russian aluminium in the Krasnoyarsk region. Of course, that's already been built, but the Russian oligarch responsible for essentially monopolizing aluminium production needs to have his personal sanctions in the United States lifted so he can return to his home in Washington, D.C. And the pitch is that if Russian aluminium were allowed into the United States, it would undercut the price of Canadian aluminium, and the two sides could clean up the profitability of a combination of U.S. and Russian aluminium, as occurred in the 1990s. That's the Russian pitch at U.S. oligarchs for Vitkov to mobilize. On the other side, in the last few hours, President Trump and U.S. Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick announced what they've called the Trump gold card for immigration of wealthy people to the United States. This changes the old U.S. investment visa provisions, and it creates what Trump actually said when asked whether his new gold card, a $5 million investment promised in return for a road to citizenship through the green card process. He was asked, and this is only a few hours ago, would this green card be available or the gold card be available to Russian oligarchs? And he said, probably. Why? And then he said, I know several very nice Russian oligarchs. In other words, what we've got is an American Express bribery card being offered by Trump to Russian oligarchs, while President Putin is offering at least one Russian oligarch plan in aluminium back to the Americans. This is what they're doing with one another. And from a Russian point of view, it's an inducement to Trump to reach agreements on the Ukraine battlefield and then subsequently the European security architecture. But frankly speaking, given the performance we've just seen on the so-called minerals agreement with Ukraine, I don't believe Trump's capable personally, and I don't think these money deals will turn into security deals.
Civilization has been challenged from the start. With all these people, things can fall apart. Ideas can spread by many different means. Whispered words on TV screens. Alarming news wherever you go. Angry people talking on the radio. Since the invention of the printing press, folks have been spreading disinformation about everything you could imagine. Stories of people, what they might have done. Stories of lines to buy ammo for guns. Wasn't Big Brother bad enough situation for us to have to add to the equation? Algorithms skewing everything you take in, personalized to everywhere you have been, creating a world where we each can be living in our own reality. Just one guy, all staffed entirely by AI. You're the target, that's clearly true. But real time is a whole new level of corporate crime. Something the world has never seen. The rumor mill and the propaganda machine, together like never seen before. What in the world might be in store? Civilization has been challenged from the start.
While Gaza is not the only place visited by the plague of Western interests, millions have been killed in the Democratic Republic of the Congo in the service of transnational capital. The Rwandan dictator Paul Kagame is the spear's point, whose military and its militia groups, most notably the Savage M23, has murdered more than 10 million Congolese in pursuit of the country's immeasurable mineral wealth. His overseeing the slaughter has continued unabated through the presidencies of Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, Barack Obama, Donald Trump, Joe Biden, and as he's done in other conflict zones of America's making, the current President Trump has promised peace on his terms, even as the outrages go on. Judy Reaver is a Montreal-based journalist and author. We spoke in December about Kagame and DRC President Felix Tshisekedi meeting up with Trump in Washington to talk peace, and her Canadian Dimension article, No End in Sight to Rwanda's War in Congo, Despite Peace Deal. Reaver's book, In Praise of Blood, The Crimes of the Rwandan Patriotic Front, examines the Rwandan genocide of the last century and subsequent flourishing of its primary progenitor, Paul Kagame. Well, now, Judy, your article is dubious of the Trump-engineered agreement signed last week in Washington, and less than a week later, your skepticism is proven justified. Reuters reported yesterday, quote, 200,000 people have fled their homes in eastern Congo in recent days, the United Nations said, as Rwanda-backed rebels march on a strategic town just days after Donald Trump hosted the Rwandan and Congolese leaders to proclaim peace. Judy, what does the public pledge to end violence mean now in light of this latest development?
Well, as you said, 200,000 Congolese civilians are on the move. War is raging. Rwanda and its rebel militia, the M23, have now captured a city called Uvira, which sits near the Burundian border. This is a major offensive only 6 days after Paul Kagame and Felix Tshisekedi, the president of Congo, inked a deal in front of Donald Trump. And Donald Trump bragged about how he had ended a war that he said has taken the lives of 10 million people in Congo since 1996, over 30 years. So what does this mean, this public pledge to end violence? What that was apparently, from all evidence now, is Kagame's normal, predictable use of deception as a primary strategy tool to wage war. This is the art of waging war. So he pretended he was interested in peace and lulling his opponent, Congo, and probably Donald Trump too, but lulling Congo into this false sense of security, and yet at the same time preparing a large-scale offensive. So it's what the Rwandans call Kagame's Rwandan Patriotic Front use of the tactic, talk and fight. So talk, pretend you're interested in peace, but actually fight. And it's a way to buy time and actually reorganize and launch a military attack when an opponent expects it the least.
You seem to wonder whether Donald Trump was in on this or not. Do we have any indications, any reaction from the White House that you're aware of?
There is nothing that indicates to me that Washington is going to punish Kagame or impose sanctions against Rwanda or its senior entourage. But at the same time, I should be cautious. I don't think this makes Donald Trump look very good. It's very bad timing for Paul Kagame to launch an offensive less than a week after he pledged peace in front of Donald Trump, and less than a week after Donald Trump bragged about saving the Congolese and saving Rwandans. So I think Donald Trump loses face. I think this is a humiliation to some extent. Do I think Donald Trump and his negotiators, Massad Boulos and others, are happy about this? No, I don't think so. Clearly, the United States under Donald Trump, I mean, you know, the United States even before Trump's administrations, have always sought leverage with Paul Kagame. And in turn, Paul Kagame has proven himself to be relevant. I mean, basically, Paul Kagame, for the last 30 years, and the president of Uganda, Yoweri Museveni, have been key agents of imperialism in Africa. They have been Washington's geopolitical linchpins. They have served the geopolitical interests of the United States. And what that means principally is access to commodities on the African continent, and also ensuring to the greatest extent, and Yoweri Museveni is more key on this respect, that the Arab influence from Sudan and other places did not encroach upon the African continent, especially Central Africa, mineral-rich Central Africa. So they have been very useful to Washington. At the same time, the Trump administration sees Congo as key to challenging China's dominance in the critical resources, critical minerals supply chain. And it's in Congo that Donald Trump and the United States can get access to those minerals. They see Rwanda as continuing to play an important role, a key role in getting Congolese minerals transported through Central Africa onto ports like Mombasa and in Kenya and Dar es Salaam, and then onto the rest of the world, in the downstream global supply chain. So they want to continue to use Kagame, and they know that if Kagame's network falls apart, then there might be trouble for them and getting in that economic corridor. So it's really a hot mess.
Their message always to everybody through all their advertising, all their PR, everything is, we are your friends. And it's like, no, you are not our friends. Friends are not people whose bottom line is how much profit they can make out of you. It is completely different.
Guerrilla Radio, knowing who our real friends are since 1999.
We're running out of time to put out a fire.
After over 2 years of a total war, there's nothing left standing of those cities by the shore, which they once called Gaza, part of ancient Palestine. Now just miles of rubble divided by a yellow. There are no playgrounds left, all of them destroyed by explosives or bulldozers systematically deployed, which destroyed the schools with all the carnage bombs will bring, leaving behind ruins scattered with colorful things. The children left alive, the little girls and little boys are playing with the little orange toys. We're
Early in his second administration, Donald Trump forced the takeover of TikTok, the popular Chinese-owned international online app with millions of American users. Most are familiar with the dance videos and other kooky stuff uploaded, but TikTok too served as a platform for subversive political messaging outside the purview of the online monopolists Google, YouTube, Facebook, Meta, and Twitter X. This was especially irksome to Israel defenders who couldn't control the withering posts regarding that entity's genocide come Holocaust in the Gaza Strip. So, owners ByteDance were forced to cede control of U.S. operations to companies acceptable to the government. First among these is Oracle. Oracle owner Larry Ellison is a big supporter of Israel, and especially the IDF, or Israeli Defense Forces. He's doled out hundreds of millions to both it and the rogue nation. Oracle, the same that through subsidiary Skydance Paramount recently purchased CBS News and is reportedly vying for CNN too, is now TikTok America's trusted security partner, charged with, quote, securing and auditing the social media platform's algorithm and user data. To aid in that task, Oracle has hired on teams of apparatchiks from Israel's notorious military intelligence outfit, Unit 8200. Past Guerrilla Radio guest Alan McLeod has written on this at Mint Press News. What it means is a further fettering of information through algorithmic and editorial gatekeeping policies, guaranteeing the platforms employing Unit 82 alumni don't feature the crimes committed by Israel and its Western sponsors. Platforms like Google, YouTube, Facebook, Meta, Twitter X, and TikTok USA. You may have noticed familiar voices disappeared from your TLs. You may have disappeared yourself, like David Rovix, author of all the music on today's show. David, who's been on this program many times over the years, had his entire catalog wiped from YouTube without so much as a how do you do recently. If you consider his immense musical prolificacy, hundreds of songs and commentaries, the scope of the erasure begins to become clear. David says, quote, in so many ways, I'm unable to effectively promote gigs, barred from using the invite feature on Facebook events, and catalog of albums deleted from YouTube Music, creating a whole cascading effect of suppression in terms of where my gigs are listed and how likely people are to hear about any of them.
Best to be. He knew about the consequences for speaking out, for supporting groups I can't talk about. Before they cancel me too, because it's the age when the corporate censors control the stage. Who's allowed on and who's kicked off? Do to him what they did to Goff Whitlam. You might have your music up where it's been for years, until the time when it all disappears. They deleted his album notes from a holocaust, among dozens of others now lost. The historical record he's been trying to keep of the Gaza side of the fascist creep taking over the net, and lots more as well, like in 1984. If you can find George Orwell, support the rule of law, then they may decide all of your albums should be taken away. You might have your music up where it's been for years, until the time where it all disappears. You might have your music up where it's been for years, until the time when it all disappears. Until the
Well, that's a wrap for Guerrilla Radio's year-ender. Of course, there was lots more happening this year past. Go to gradio.substack.com for the complete story. Happiest New Year's to you all, and adio to you, 2025.